I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current. Move fast and break things. That was a catchy mantra for an upstart tech company started in a Harvard dorm room. But with Facebook 15 years old this week, the social media giant's growing chorus of critics is complaining the company moved too fast and broke almost everything. Concerns range from privacy issues to fake news and media manipulation, even actually the undermining of democracy. The Delete Facebook hashtag is gaining steam, and it's even gaining academic credibility. A new Stanford University study released this week says quitting Facebook may even make you happier. New York-based poet and author Alicia Cook struggled with the decision to delete her Facebook account in 2011. Now she says she's better off without it.
When I first started using it, it wasn't even Facebook.com. You had to type in thefacebook.com. It was definitely back then in its purest form, which was to connect people. It quickly morphed into just very self-absorption, and I felt very, like, overexposed. All social media really is a highlight reel. You feel less than. It's very easy to, like, unravel and just be looking at your phone all day because you don't even realize how much social media and mindless scrolling affect your mental health. I'm so glad I don't have Facebook now the last election season, everything, because I've heard it's been, like, it's worse.
Roger McNamee was an early adopter and an early believer. He was once even an advisor to founder Mark Zuckerberg. Today, Roger McNamee is one of Facebook's fiercest critics. He's the author of the book Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe, and he's in our New York studio. Hello.
Anna Maria, it's a pleasure to be here.
I got to ask about that title, Zucked. Pretty clever.
My wife came up with it. And, you know, people ask me, what does it mean? I say, it means whatever you want it to mean.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the title there. Catastrophe is a big word.
It
is.
Why
do you see Facebook that way today?
So I actually see it as broader than Facebook. I think you have to factor Google into the equation as well. And the reason is because the challenges of social media historically were about massive surveillance, about manipulation of attention, and the fact that the advertising model created incentives so that bad actors would not only share disinformation, but would attempt to manipulate what people think. All of that is about to get much worse. We have this new generation of smart devices using Alexa and other voice-powered systems that are going to take the surveillance into parts of our lives that previously were private, including the bedroom. And you have artificial intelligence that's coming online now, telling people what to think, telling people what to enjoy and buy, and doing so in a way that's not only opaque, but filled with all kinds of errors, implicit biases, and things that, you know, could be prevented. But because the companies making this stuff are in such a hurry, they don't bother to fix the problems before they become apparent.
And I want to talk about the wider issue of all the companies as we go on, but let's just concentrate on Facebook for a minute. What was Facebook like when it started?
When I first met Mark Zuckerberg, which was in 2006, he was 22, I was 50. The company was tiny. It barely had any revenue at all. It didn't have that many users. It didn't even have the news feed, which is the core of today's experience. I met him, and he was astonishing. He was striking. And he was really thoughtful, idealistic, really intense, all characteristics that you would generally associate with success. And the key thing about the idea of Facebook in those days was that it really was a simple product that did two things that mattered. It had authenticated identity, and it had the ability to control privacy in a meaningful way. And those two things, in my mind, meant the company could become as big as Google was in those days, maybe 100 million users in the English-speaking world.
And the creation of the like button was a game changer, huh?
It was. The first thing they did like that was they gave you the ability to tag photographs. And that created a feeling, a psychological feeling that you had to have reciprocity, and that was the first viral thing they did. And then the like button changed everything. That gave them social cues, right? You suddenly were finding out what people's emotional state was, and that was the beginning of the end relative to the sort of soft and cuddly early years of Facebook.
Now, when you met him, and he was 22 and you were 50, he was looking for advice.
He was. I took the meeting without knowing what the topic was, and I had been observing the tech industry at that point for, I think, 24 years. And so I was very excited to meet the founder of this company because even then it was obvious that he had something very special. And I took the meeting and I opened it with a 2-minute monologue in which I said, look, I just have to tell you something. I think either Microsoft or YouTube is going to try to acquire Facebook, and they're going to offer you a big number and your family, and everybody's going to tell you to take it. I said, I can't tell you what to do, but I think you have something unique, and I think your vision is brilliant, and if you still believe in it, you shouldn't take the offer. Well, it turned out the reason he was coming to see me was that Yahoo had offered $1 billion for Facebook, and pretty much everything I told him had just happened. And so that was a very fortuitous thing, and I had an opportunity from that point forward to advise him as the company was evolving. And for 3 years, we were very close. And the nature of businesses like that is that the founder really has to keep upgrading their mentor group to suit whatever the problems are of the day. And I was the right person at that time. But it was really obvious to me in 2009, once Sheryl Sandberg came in, that he wasn't going to need me anymore. And so the last thing that I did that was really important was introducing him to Sheryl and suggesting that he bring her in as the chief operating officer.
Okay. So we just heard from Alicia Cook on how the Facebook experience has grown worse over time for her. How did you see it change as you moved on?
Funnily enough, for me, it was mostly positive. I play in a rock and roll band, and we were very early adopters of Facebook when they introduced groups, and we could start to have a central way to communicate with our fans. And it worked really well for us, as it does for many people. I think there in the United States, there have been things like Black Lives Matter and the March for Our Lives that used Facebook to organize. And I think that's one of the things it does really well. I was largely unaware of the dark side. I mean, yes, I did see that if I spent too long on Facebook or if I spent time doing political things, that it would make me angry or frustrated. But I didn't see it as a global harm. I thought that was specific to me. And it wasn't until 2016 that I started to notice things going on that made me think there was something wrong with the architecture. And I reached out to Mark and Sheryl in October of 2016 to make my friends aware of what I thought was a systemic problem in the product that they needed to get on top of right away.
And how'd they respond?
Well, graciously, but without any interest in actually following through. They thought my concerns were isolated, not systemic, and that they'd already taken care of them. When the election happened, I got, shall we say, a little bit more emotionally engaged in this, and I begged them to do what Johnson & Johnson did after the poisoning in Tylenol, which is to say Johnson & Johnson didn't put the poison in the bottles, but they knew they had to take care of their customers. And so they withdrew all the bottles of Tylenol for a while until they could invent tamper-proof packaging. And I thought Facebook needed to do something like that because it's a business based on trust. And if they lost the trust, the fact that the law says they're not responsible for what third parties do wasn't going to matter. They were not interested in that either. And so after 3 months of trying to convince them, I became an activist.
How much control does Mark Zuckerberg have over Facebook and the direction it goes?
100%. He has full voting control, and he has all of the stature of having been right for years and years and years and having conceived this idea. He has complete control.
Yeah, you call it a golden vote rule?
Yeah. So the way that one works is everybody gets to vote and then Mark decides.
Last week, the fact-checking website Snopes announced that it is pulling out of its partnership with Facebook. I want you to listen to Brooke Binkowski, the former managing editor of Snopes.
I think that Facebook is going in the wrong direction as far as fact-checking goes anyway. What they should be doing is hiring people internally. They should be putting a stop to their own disinformation since they're spreading it themselves. They definitely need to end their algorithms or at the very least make them opt in instead of just subjecting us all to the sort of false stories and hoax stories for engagement purposes that they've been doing. And so I think that they've got to take responsibility for what they're doing. They cannot outsource fact-checking. They have to do it on their own. And they also need to clean up the mess that they made.
Roger McNamee, what do you think of what she says there?
I completely agree. And here's the challenge. The entire business model is based on outsourcing absolutely everything that can be outsourced. And the business model is based on appealing to outrage and fear because those things create higher levels of engagement, which means that disinformation is far more valuable to Facebook. Conspiracy theory is far more valuable than facts. And so what Brooke's describing is a flaw in the business model, and it cannot be fixed. And we saw a similar thing this also last week when ProPublica announced that they had been terminated as a researcher on Facebook's election database, you know, the election ads.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing a thing similar to Snopes, and Facebook cut them off with a completely ridiculous explanation. And the thing we need to understand is this is Facebook's MO. The corporate motto, I have adjusted because this is what it more accurately should be, which is move fast, break things, apologize, repeat. That they have a very simple thing, which is they apologize, say they'll do better. They may do some external thing for a while, but as soon as the controversy dies down, they just go back to business as usual.
And this is why you're an activist now.
This is why I'm an activist, because it's not just that all that behavior is bad. The technology itself is allowing a growing threat to develop around these voice-activated smart appliances and around artificial intelligence. And again, that's why I point to the fact that it's not just Facebook. I started with Facebook because that was the company I knew best. It was the one where I had a relationship. It's the one where I saw the problem first and the one where I reached out. So Zucked is really the story of my discovery. And in it, imagine that I'm Jimmy Stewart in the Alfred Hitchcock movie Rear Window, and I see something that looks like a crime and I don't understand it. So I pull on the thread. And that's the narrative arc that I use to tell this story, because Facebook and Google gather data on literally everyone. They manipulate people in a way that affects everyone, including people who don't use the products, and it's really terrifying to me.
Tell us a little bit more of how you see that manipulation happening.
So it starts really young. It turns out that screens, whether they're on a smartphone or a tablet, are just tremendous babysitters. And then they discover that YouTube has this channel called YouTube Kids, and so they let the kids watch these videos, all of which start out very nicely, but many of which are algorithmically created, and they're designed to stimulate the children with, you know, more and more outrageous things that cause dopamine hits, which is, you know, essentially a neurotransmitter that stimulates the kid in a way that's not meant to be sustainable. And so kids get hyperactive and they stop being engage with the real world because it's not as interesting as these screens. Then you get them into elementary school and they get a smartphone, and that's when texting and Instagram come in. And then as they get to be teenagers, you have the fear of missing out, which is a really hard thing for teenagers to handle because social approval is so important. And then when they become adults, you get the whole issue of filter bubbles, which is this notion that Facebook and Google do, where they tailor everything you see based on what you've liked in the past, because that maximizes engagement. And in doing so, they create a hermetically sealed information bubble around you. So you, if you remember the movie Truman Show, you're living your own reality and you can have your own facts. And that has really undermined democracy very broadly.
So you're talking about a huge societal change that you're saying was essentially triggered by the big tech companies, mostly Facebook, because it started that. Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying. But you use the word crime. That's an awfully strong word.
Well, I'm saying here that I'm using the term metaphorically, right? Because I just think that we live in a world where, at least in the world I grew up in, every person has a right to self-determination. And the notion that a company can use deceit, can manipulate people without their being aware of it, take data from them without their being aware of it, use it in ways that they're not aware of, that feels wrong to me at a very fundamental level.
You know, we invited someone from Facebook to answer to some of these issues. Facebook declined, sent us a statement, and I'm going to quote it, a part of the statement. Here it is. We take criticism seriously. Over the past 2 years, we've fundamentally changed how we operate to better protect the safety and security of people using Facebook. The reality is Roger McNamee hasn't been involved with Facebook for a decade, end quote. What do you make of that response?
Well, here's what I'll observe two things. So to the first point, last week we had two instances that are really worth thinking about. First, Facebook was caught, and there's a legal case involved with them tailoring game applications to allow kids to run up huge bills on their parents' credit cards. And they did this deceptively. They were caught at it, and you know, they refused to do refunds, and this was very predatory. And then a second thing happened was both Facebook and Google were caught by Apple circumventing the rules of the App Store to release what they called research products that do massive surveillance on the people who use them, many of whom were minors under the age of 18. Now, if Facebook listens to critics and has made the changes, those two things wouldn't have happened because those are current, right? And those these issues have been on the table for a long time. And the second thing I would observe is it's demonstrably true I have not been involved for the last 10 years. It's also not relevant. I'm an analyst. I'm not making a point about the inside of Facebook. I'm simply pointing out what you can see. And I would say these are all things that have happened in the last few months. So I would dispute that Facebook takes criticism seriously. I think what they do is they try really hard to appear to take it seriously without actually acting on it.
Now, Facebook has announced its plans to merge WhatsApp, Messenger, and Instagram messaging. This is raising concerns. Critics are saying this gives big tech companies too much power. Tim Wu is a professor at Columbia University. He's the author of The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. He says this should be a red flag. Listen to him.
Either American, Canadian, or European law enforcement should open an investigation into Facebook's mergers. They've had an enormous number of unchallenged mergers with which they've been able to protect their monopoly. And I think without serious competition, Facebook's never had to be serious about privacy concerns. You know, we're in a new age of internet monopolies, and we have an old law, the antitrust law, that calls for the breakup of monopolies, and I'd suggest we're overdue, and I'm suggesting the takeover, the consolidation of Instagram and WhatsApp is a trigger that should make people think hard about why we're allowing monopoly in so many areas of our life.
Roger McNamee, the U.S. has forced the breakup of big companies in the past. Can they do it with a company that spans the globe?
I would hope so. So I think Professor Wu is exactly right about the problem here, that Facebook's merger of these three things has huge implications. They should never have been allowed to buy either of these companies in the first place. And the decisions were obviously anti-competitive on the face of them from the first day. And, you know, I think there are a lot of people in the Congress of the United States who now regret not having had action there.
What we're talking about really, you're talking about something that needs regulation if it's going to happen.
No, that's correct. I believe that the users, the humans formerly known as users, have more power than they realize. We do have the power to change our behavior, to take our attention away from these companies, to apply it differently. And we have the ability to push our elected representatives to regulate these companies. And I hope we will all do that. When I think about Facebook and Google today, it's going to take a concerted effort. The level of complexity of the problem is pretty huge, and it's getting worse because of smart devices and artificial intelligence.
I want you to hear from Gizmodo reporter Kashmir Hill, who tried to take things into her own hands to see if she could live without the big five, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple. She did an experiment where she blocked them. What she found surprised her.
I couldn't use Uber and Lyft apps. Spotify was taken down. And just the entire internet was slower for me. Facebook was really difficult to block because you will miss out on things. During that week, one of my closest friends had her baby, and I missed it, use it. And it just really hit home for me. So I spent the last 12 years like uploading photos, making connections to friends. And so there's just a lot of me there. Photos from 2 years ago of like when I had my daughter, and it's just these really meaningful memories. A digital history of my life, and it's hard just to hit delete on that. It was surprising to me how dependent we are on these companies. And people always say, if you think they're too invasive or too powerful, you should just stop using their services. And I wanted to see if that was possible. And I found that it just was not possible. And if you are worried about their power, their control, then yeah, I think the results of my experiment were alarming.
Okay. What do you think?
So I read her original article to hear it in her voice is really amazing. So I've been running a similar experiment, and I know exactly what she's talking about. Relative to Google, I've been quite successful. I've taken Google out of my life, and I don't know if you remember the old video game Frogger, where you're the frog and you have to get across the river by hopping across logs. And I treated Google as the river, and I used other products, 1Password and Ghostery and DuckDuckGo and things like that, to replace the functions that I would get from Google. And every once in a while, I'll inadvertently touch a Google map and wind up having to start the game again. But on that one, I've been pretty successful. Facebook, for me, has been impossible to get off of. My band does all of its promotion there. I'm trying to communicate with people. I'm teaching, you know, the things I learned about platforms. I'm using Facebook to do that. And what I've done is to change my behavior. No more news, right?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Less emotion.
That Facebook starts as Face Mash, a site to raise the attractiveness of college women, of women on campus, and it turns into this juggernaut.
Yeah. You know, when I first met Mark, I consciously chose not to focus on his years at Harvard because the Mark I knew was very responsible and very thoughtful, and I wanted to believe that he had grown out of the hijinks of the college years. And what we've learned since is that there's a piece of that hacker mentality, that defiance of authority, that remains pretty central to Mark's character, but which was not in any way apparent to me during the years that I worked with him.
Is that surprising? I mean, he's a plutocrat. He's a really rich guy, one of many who live in a different world. They live in a rarefied world.
No arguing about that. But again, keep in mind, when I was working with him, they didn't have much in the way of revenue. They didn't have the current business model. So I haven't interacted with Mark at all in his plutocrat era.
You still have shares in Facebook, am I right?
I do.
Why?
And I have, very simply, I didn't want anybody to think that my activism was an attempt to crash the stock. You know, I wanted people to understand that I had profited from this and was, for the period of my aggressive activism, going to hang in there on the stock and take the same risks as the employees. And just, I wanted to eliminate any uncertainty about my motivations.
How's your relationship with Mark Zuckerberg now?
I don't have one. The last time I interacted with him was on October 30th of 2016 when I sent him the op-ed. And that was the last time I heard from either Cheryl or Mark. The last time I spoke to anyone at all at Facebook was in February of 2017. And they ignored me for a long time, and now they're doing what they said with you. They're sending around things that frame their position without actually addressing any of the issues that I'm raising.
Your message is we have to be more aware of what we're in the midst of now.
And also less trusting of technology. For 50 years, our trust was completely justified. And these guys essentially took advantage of that for their economic benefit. And once burned, so we need to be twice shy.
Roger McNamee, thanks for your thoughts on all of this.
Anna Maria, this has been a great pleasure. And to all my friends in Canada, I just want to say thank you and keep up the good fight.
Roger McNamee, author of Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe. He joined us from our New York studio. Let us know what you think of what he's saying. Tweet us at The Current CBC. Find us on Facebook. Go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent. Go use all those tech giants to contact us and let us know what you're thinking.